Hello and welcome to 105 The Ticket's video game podcast. I'm your host, Ben Humbert, and I have Henry in the studio hosting with me today. We have a lot of crazy things happen this past week in gaming, but we are going to be covering just a few specifics. Most importantly, paid mod mishaps, season pass surprise with the Arkham Knight game coming out. But we're going to start off by talking about a bad breakup between Konami and Kojima. So how are you doing today, Henry?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Ben. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good this afternoon. Things have been a little bit hustle and bustle on my end, so I apologize. We're starting this a little bit late today, but it'll probably still be up at the same time tomorrow.
No worries at all. I got to tell you, honestly, I'm surprised you guys even let me come back on after postponing 3 weeks in a row.
Oh, no, don't worry. We make fun, but we're happy to have you on here. I think, just like I was telling you earlier, Tom and I banter and go back and forth, but we don't really know what we're talking about most of the time. We're just kind of throwing opinions at the wall. So it's really good, especially with you and Max being here in the future, that we'll have a real down-to-earth technical side on things. Because I'm sure there will be statements I'm going to make today's podcast, and you're going to correct me, and I'm thanking you for doing that ahead of time, because I don't want anything to go out there incorrectly.
Yeah, no worries. Just think of me as, like, the internet commenter personified.
There we go. Just not quite as trollish. I don't see a fedora, and there's just a slight amount of beard hair going on.
Right. No promises, though.
All right, so I think that one of the things that we should touch on with this breakup between Konami and Kojima, it was kind of just out of the blue, it seemed like to me, and I know you had a lot to say about the battle that was going on between them, but for most of you who don't know, or any of you who don't know out there, the game Silent Hills, which was based off of a startup PT, has actually been canceled. They were going into big production for a long time, and they were going to have Guillermo del Toro directing it in part, and they were also going to have Norman Reedus, the gentleman who plays, I guess I don't remember the character's name, on The Walking Dead, but
he's Merle's brother.
There we go, Merle's brother. We'll just leave it at that.
Dude with the cool crossbow.
Now we need a Walking Dead fact checker in here, but they were going to have a likeness of him for the main character, and it was going to be a horror-based game. Now, I don't know all that much about Silent Hills itself, but I did watch some gameplay on PT. What were your thoughts on Silent Hills?
Well, the first, I really enjoyed the original Silent Hill games. One of my favorite genres is the survival horror genre, and mm-hmm. we've been pretty starved for new games that are not just terrible, just push it out desperation genre type quality games.
I agree with you on that.
And so I really enjoyed them. They're very, very Japanese. Yeah, actually, I was just listening to the, what is it? It's the Dude Soup podcast this afternoon, and they gave up on playing the game, trying to just get it started so they could talk about Silent Hills.
I'm so thankful that you watch Dude Soup, because I just started getting into the Funhouse stuff after they switched over from Machinima, and I think they're doing fantastic there. So, but going back into the Silent Hills, they were saying that they had, like, reports come back already from Del Toro and Norman Reedus, saying they were both disappointed about things going on with that. But there were also some actual discrepancies between Kojima himself and Konami, more in tune with the games that he's produced and brought out. And I read somewhere or saw somewhere on the interwebs that there was going to be, the Metal Gear Solid 5. I think you said that was going to be his last game.
Yeah,
but they're like taking his name off of every game IP.
Yeah, it's a very weird kind of drama power play type situation. My understanding is that there's some kind of power struggle going on between Kojima and Konami, and essentially Konami is not having it. They're calling his bluff, and they have said now, well, they've not confirmed it 100%, but it is understood that the Phantom Pain, Metal Gear Solid 5, will be the last Metal Gear Solid game produced by Hideo Kojima.
Now, see, my question for that is, do you think they're going to still make more Metal Gear Solids?
Yes, they've already said, already announced that they're going to continue work. I think they might have even said they've already started work on the next one, which frankly I think is kind of a slap in the face to the guy who created I'll be very interested. I don't know if I'm happy or sad to be thinking that we might be seeing the end of the 4-hour cutscene.
Yeah, and that's, kind of where the mixed bag of emotions on this comes in.
Right.
Konami kind of screwed the pooch on this, because Kojima was such a powerful director of these games.
It would be like Nintendo firing Miyamoto.
Yes, and that's exactly what I was going to go for, is he is such an integral part of all the money you've been getting.
Yeah.
And so to kind of see them go off without him and then just try and redo what he did, I'm personally kind of hoping that it's a flop. As much as it would be great to see another good Metal Gear Solid game, I just don't think that they should move on without him. I think maybe they should turn it into a new genre, find a different game to create.
But we know better than to expect that from a AAA dev in this day and age.
The money bags are a lot heavier these days, and moving them outside of your house is not really a possibility.
Right, and I don't exactly look to Japanese devs for innovation, to be honest.
Well, yeah, that's that goes back to the old N64 when Mario Party was the biggest thing, and we just came out with Mario Party, what was it, 10 recently or something
God,
like
I
that?
I think we're past that,
to
be honest.
Just a whole barrel full of crud, in my opinion.
One other thing I wanted to note about, you know, you were saying you're hoping that Konami, you know, doesn't, well, not hoping they do poorly, but you're not necessarily anticipating them producing a high-quality MGS game.
Very much so. That's a very polite way to say it.
Well, it's worth noting, I was reading last night, and as it turns out, they have also, just this week, voluntarily delisted from the New York Stock Exchange.
Oh, wow.
Yes. So, now, I don't think this is necessarily a sign that they're in trouble. My understanding is that last year, 99.71% of all of their stock traded was between the UK and Japan. So apparently American investors agree with me that Japanese devs are not innovators.
It makes a lot of sense now that you're saying those statistics, because it's just kind of one of those things that maybe they're just letting the engines cool off. They're gonna scrap back all the pieces together once this whole issue with Kojima is over, and once they can start, you know, more influential production. But they don't have much funds coming in now, so I think that's probably a smart decision for them.
I would definitely agree.
All right, so I think that the next thing that we should probably move into that with money kind of being a central issue here was the whole paid mods disaster flop, just the whole tremendous airplane crash.
That was definitely a cluster.
So it's just kind of one of those things that you have to say, you know, there's a good side to this conversation from both angles.
I would agree. I think that both sides made some pretty big mistakes here.
Yes.
I don't think there's any denying that.
And there's definitely something that is needed to be said, that there will be something coming back. They will, you know, make sure that things are better before they come back with something like this again.
But do expect to see it in the future.
But yes, exactly. So what we're talking about is that Steam had a whole bunch of paid mods released this past weekend, or was it last week sometime?
It was canceled on the 27th, and it had been out for 4 days
only. So just about, you know, over the weekend sometime. And so they had this option, pay what you want. It was a pretty good feature for some of the games.
I'm just going to step in really quick and correct you on this one. Sorry.
No trouble.
It was the mod author got to set a price. And they had a pay what you want option with a minimum price attached.
Okay.
Which is very different.
Yes, that is very different, because I think that a lot of people like myself assumed, you're just going to go in and get the one mod, pay 25 cents
right,
and deal with it.
Right.
Okay. So that's good to know on that sense. But with that feature, it just kind of let loose a lot of people's crazy sides.
Well, let me just start this by saying that I've been modding for a very long time. I've played mods in everything from the Elder Scrolls series, starting with Morrowind, to the Fallout stuff. I love Counter-Strike. I love Team Fortress. One of my favorite mods actually would be probably the Just Cause 2 multiplayer mod.
Very
where
nice.
Some young enterprising dude just added netcode, added full multiplayer to Just Cause 2, and it was so well received by the developers, it's actually listed as DLC on Steam for DLC.
I was going to say, he got a nice big tip of the hat
just for
messing around and trying to do something fun with the game.
Funny that. It's almost like there's constructive ways that devs can support modders without putting the onus on the community.
Oh, if only there was a method of making it work.
If only I could think of one. You know, those games like Counter-Strike and Team Fortress, you know, those modders didn't make the Team Fortress 2 and Counter-Strike 1.6 and Source for free, man.
And so to some of the listeners out there who may not, you know, be into the whole mod community, who may not know all about this behind the scenes thing.
Sure.
A lot of people who love games, just in the layman's terms, they decide that they're going to make more of the game and they're going to do something with it. And I know a lot of people who are interested in this podcast have seen videos where people do GTA mods, so that's a really good base.
If you don't mind, I'd like to to clarify for some people, because I know a lot of people have a bit of a misconception about the breadth of what a mod can
be. Yeah, and I think that would be another great topic, so go right ahead.
Yeah, so usually when I, especially when I was researching this topic and stuff, I really noticed that the vast majority of people seemed to, the vast majority of people who had issues with paying for mods have an image that all a mod is like a recoloring of a weapon. Or it adds one new sound effect to the
right.
game. And they're going, you can't charge me $10 because when I swing my sword, it makes a chicken noise. And, you know, and which is understandable. Of course not.
Coming from that type of closed-minded perspective, it does make sense.
Precisely.
Why they'd be mad.
But let me tell you a really quick story. There's a modder. His name escapes me right now. He's the creator of the Wet and Cold mod for Skyrim.
Okay.
He was actually a completely retired mod developer. He'd released his final version a little while ago, and he'd stepped away from the scene.
Uh-huh.
He was actually emailed. He and several other key modders were emailed by Bethesda themselves to say that they really enjoyed his mod around the office and that they would really appreciate it if he would consider coming back and making a new paid version to put up on Steam.
Wow.
And telling him, here's your opportunity to, you know, make a living modding. Which, that is a wonderful story, right up until you realize that when he put Wet and Cold up on Steam for $5, everyone rioted. It was insanity, to the point where he was saying he was considering pulling down all of his mods, all versions, including the free ones.
Wow.
Now, just so you guys know, Wet and Cold, that's not much of a description. What it is Skyrim by default, you know, it's just a typical third-person, first-person fantasy RPG.
For sure, okay.
However, Wet and Cold adds a survival element to it. So, for example, when you go in the, when you run into the water, you will come out and you'll be dripping. And I want to verify that this isn't partnered with anything else, but as I understand, you take additional stamina damage. If you fall into a river and you're in a winter environment,
yep.
you will take cold damage
oh,
until
wow.
you dry off at a fire that you have to create.
So it
involves camping and adds tents. It's a very, very in-depth mod.
Yeah, it makes a lot more a realistic feel to it. I feel like that would be a great thing to offer up. So why was the issue that it was such an outrage over the $5?
Well, here's the thing, and I can kind of understand this. So I think the best way to look at what a fair price for a mod is,
mm-hmm.
is something that I was actually thinking about when I was listening to you guys talk about DLC a couple weeks ago.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Or microtransactions, which is what you need to do is to look at the initial investment for the basic features of the game. So let's say Skyrim is a $60 title with all the bells and whistles included
yep.
with it. I do not think that, let's see, what would that be? I'm terrible at math. It's, what, a sixth of the price of the game
yeah.
is a reasonable, I'm sorry, actually it's a twelfth of the price of the game, but still.
I had, yeah.
a twelfth of the price of the game, I don't think is reasonable to add you shiver when it's cold.
No, and that's a very good point to put out there. I think that looking at those price estimates, it would not be reasonable. But
right. I think the best example of this would be something like Goro in MK10.
Yes, oh, thank you for bringing that up.
Goro is $5,
yeah.
I believe, to add to your game. And they are constantly reminding you of this because when you hover over him in the character select screen, it offers to take you to the store page,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, gamers love that.
Yeah, they just want to be redirected and
flashbacks
looped
to
around.
Dragon Age.
Oh, good gosh.
Oh, it's
yeah.
at the camp. Would you like to do the mission at the tower? Only $10. Well, anyways, so he's $5. How many characters are in that game?
I want to say 20.
I think it might be 24, but
yeah.
It's a lot. So the game is $60 new for 24 characters. Then you can pay $5 for one character.
Yeah, and there's nothing else that comes with him. There's no features that he has that are outstanding.
I almost prefer the easy fatalities and the unlock the whole crypt for $20 options.
Yeah.
Because at least with those, well, outside of the easy fatalities, they aren't really changing anything or taking anything out of the game. I will say that I do wish that the easy fatalities, not to get completely off topic. But
no, that's fine.
They did, to be clear, they used to be a cheat code, and I think a lot of people haven't mentioned this.
Yeah.
They were included in the game traditionally.
Yep.
This is the, well, technically it's MK10, but I think it might be more than the 10th game. But
okay.
They're, you know, they've always had some form of easy fatalities since one of the earlier iterations. And it's just, it's annoying to see something. I see it in GTA as well, kind of with the new microtransactions, where they're basically saying what used to be a cheat code, now you got to pay for, because that's just the way the world is, even in a single player game.
And I think in a world run by capitalistic ideals like that, I think it's something that we're not really ever going to avoid.
No.
Especially as long as these microtransactions continue to push money towards developers in some form. Because just like, you know, with Goro or with some of the things in GTA, it doesn't have to be a huge percentage of the game. It can literally just be one feature that a million people are all going to want to have, and they can make, you know, a good enough game sale on that to market it. And that's really all that it's ever going to be.
Exactly.
How much are we going to get back for this, and how many people are going to continue to want this in 2 years from now?
Exactly.
And that's another thing I said to Tom in the last podcast is, we're not really even looking at this month's game or next year's game. We're looking at what's the game going to look like that's out now in 5 years.
Right.
What are we going to be able to do with this existing property in 5 years that's going to continue to make us money? And microtransactions are the way to do it. And going into the paid mods that were available on Steam, just the outrage that came out from that, it's totally understandable. There were goofy ones, albeit, but there were mods up there that were able to be paid for, where it was like, you literally get nothing. You get rubbish.
Yeah.
And they were probably only charging 25 cents or something for it.
Well,
but it's still the ideal that they're charging you money.
Precisely. Yeah. It's kind of reminiscent of the Wild West that is the App Store on Apple.
Absolutely.
I just wanted to clarify something really quick.
Go ahead.
The Wet and Cold mod is actually an extension for the Frostfall mod. It is the Frostfall mod that adds the actual in-game, you have to sleep or you take this damage. You have to, if you fall in the water, you have to dry off. Wet and Cold adds things like wet drips when you come out of water, soggy feet, which adds a splash sound, your brain blind, your breath, you can see the mist when you breathe in the cold.
Oh my
so
gosh.
It's what it really is.
It was literally less
paired
than
with
that.
It.
Yeah.
Yes. That said, this is a mod I play with every Skyrim play.
Really?
Okay. Everyone. Right now I'm running a Skyrim game that probably has about 173 mods in it, and this is one of the first mods I always grab. This is up there with things like UI edits.
Yeah, and that's what happens, though, is if there's enough people out there that can see the game being fun in another way, they're going to make the money, and it's not a terrible thing because they can still show this awesome feature to a bunch more people.
Right.
I think one of the cool things with mods coming now to GTA 5 on the PC is the fact that, like, I just saw one the other day that you can enable Ragdoll at any point in the game, even
yeah,
in story cutscenes.
There was a wonderful, oh yes, the drunk yoga.
The video
that
montage,
good,
yeah.
But even better, you should check out, if you guys haven't seen this after the show, look it up. There's a great Trevor O. Jackass video.
Oh, great. Yep. I'm
and
I'm
it
ready
is
to load
wonderful.
That one up.
They just recreate a bunch of classic Jackass stunts with the ragdoll and unlimited health, and he just runs around the city
and does some great stuff like that. If I played more games on PC, I would have already bought GTA 5 PC just at hearing that news.
Right.
I would have ran to wherever I could have or gone online as quickly as possible and picked that up.
Sure.
Because that's just going to rake in people's money. It's so appealing to see that stuff, but you have to know where to draw the line on pricing these things. And that's why I said earlier, it will come back.
Now,
they will bring them back, but it'll be different.
Right. Now, one thing I did want to mention about GTA mods is that it's worth noting, you know, we're talking about, everybody's saying it's so great that Rockstar's letting people mod GTA 5 and this and that. I'd like to clarify that the Rockstar editor is akin to something like Gmod, which, for those of you who don't know, that they took Half-Life 2 and basically made a toolkit that lets you place actors and create scenarios.
Yep.
And it's fun, but it is not modding. It is using, it's a different game, essentially. You're playing within that game.
Yes.
GTA 5 has the, the Rockstar,
editor?
It's not the editor.
No,
it's like, it's something to do with acting. It's one sec.
Yeah, you've got me. I just can't think about it. I know exactly what you're talking about.
It's so many stupid hacks here.
So we'll just cut here, and then as soon as you find it, we'll cut back in. And I'm trying to, like, what does it enable specifically? Because maybe
it is the thing that allows you to do the Garry's Mod type stuff.
Oh, okay.
They have that, and then, well, I really wish I could find the exact name though. Well, forget it. We'll just cut that part before it becomes relevant.
That's no trouble.
But essentially, what I wanted to clarify was that there is no toolkit released with Grand Theft Auto V. Mm-hmm. The real mods we've seen have been things like there was a sun mod that increased the brightness slightly, stuff like that. That's really minor stuff. But the reason we're seeing such minor mods is not because people are just getting their footing, as a lot of people are reporting. It's because there is no official toolkit for this. And because of that, people are literally uncompressing encrypted files, and I mean, they're essentially hacking.
That's true. I was going to say Rockstar is not allowing them to do anything. They just basically said, you're going to do it regardless of what we say.
Right.
So we're just going to put the kibosh on it right now, and, you know,
and I think
we'll see
part
what
of
happens.
That, I think part of that is almost like a legal maneuver.
Yes.
It kind of reminds me of when the Elder Scrolls put a copyright strike took the game Scrolls to court. The Mojang game. Or is that Mojang? I know it's Notch's game.
I'm not sure. Mojang.
Was he still with Mojang?
I can't clarify.
Okay. But to my point being, they have said, I mean, there's a reason that the notched pickaxe is an item in Skyrim.
Yes. Yep.
And it's because they were saying no hard feelings. This is, we are legally required to defend our copyright.
Yep.
And I think it's kind of the same thing with this. I think after all of the fallout with the hot coffee mod, which for those of you who don't know what that is, when GTA San Andreas came out, personally my favorite GTA for the record, when that first came out, there for PC, an enterprising, well, I don't know if enterprising is the right word, young modder hacker went in and found an undeleted sex scene. And it was a mod that got actually got national news coverage.
There
was a huge outrage about GTA having sex in the game. And as it turns out, it was an insane, insanely in-depth process. I'm not going to say I didn't try it, but I will say I didn't get it working.
So is this the file that was like buried underneath?
Yeah,
and it was like in a game in the game,
right,
that you could only access by doing some certain thing. They took that certain feature out and like buried the scene. Okay.
Yeah. Basically, I think a lot of people don't realize that when you're coding something as big as a game, a lot of features get added and removed throughout the development.
Yes.
And people make calls about stuff like, we're not going to have sex in this game, mm-hmm, in this case. And you can't really just pull stuff out because everything is kind of interconnected the way that it's all built. So they can deactivate it, but they don't want to completely remove it from the disk because it would add tons more development time to just get everything going.
Yeah, and no one wants to hear that they're going to take a little longer to develop.
They're going
to
take a little
now.
Longer to make sure that no hacking modders can make a sex scene,
yep,
with everyone wearing clothes.
It's not really the foresight that most developers go into their program, just like on automatically knowing that.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Now, one thing I wanted to get to while we're still on this topic,
yeah,
is,
for sure.
You had talked about how some people were putting up things that essentially weren't really mods. The 25-cent stuff you had mentioned earlier, like,
yeah,
it's just any little thing they can. Or yeah, I had said the chicken squawking weapon swing attack,
yes,
shall we say. But one thing that I think we haven't covered and that a lot of people aren't covering is that there was a serious, serious issue with stolen content. People were just,
yes,
going to the Nexus, downloading mods from other well-known modders, uploading it to Steam, and as we know about Valve's laissez-faire way of running Steam, there is no recourse for a modder who's saying, this is my mod.
Nope.
He says, this is my mod, and they say, well, we'll consider taking it down once you can prove to us that it's your mod.
Yeah.
How do you do that? How do you prove that a mod is yours? Seriously, how could you do that?
I don't think that there really is a way. I think that it's, in a lot of cases, just lost. And that's really troubling because I did hear about this, totally forgot about it immediately after I heard it. But like,
yeah,
that's
a real concern.
It's a real concern. It's a disturbing thing to have happen to certain modders who take their work seriously and put hours into,
yeah,
this profession that they're still an amateur in regards to people. Like, they're going out there and they're just providing you with some minor thing, or they're trying to do something groundbreaking for building the game up, and then all of a sudden someone takes that work. That's plagiarism at its core.
Yeah.
And I think that Steam needs to do a much better job, or Valve needs to do a much better job of monitoring how those legal types of discrepancies happen.
Yeah, well, the issue in this case, as I understand it, like, the servers were barely even running while this was active.
Oh, okay.
So I'm wondering, too, if, I mean, considering they only have one guy as far as, well, I'm joking, of course, but they have one tech support guy.
Yes.
I'm sure he was very, very overwhelmed with people complaining, people saying this mod doesn't work, because that's the other thing. 24 hours was the free refund period that,
yep,
they gave. They said, if it doesn't work, you don't like it, within 24 hours, you can get a full refund. That's great. I've played mods that are bigger than DLC. I've played mods that take weeks to even start to see half the content.
Yeah, or to really even see a change.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, in New Vegas, I was just recently playing a mod, in New Vegas Bounties, highly recommended, it's great. It adds bounty boards and a whole bounty hunting storyline to New Vegas with Dead or Alive and capture them and all. It's very fun.
That's very
Anyways, it's being released part by part, and the third part kind of just stops. Mm-hmm. I found a bug in it, and I just couldn't go any further. And so... this is something that I would say is worth like almost DLC. I'd say it's worth probably $10 with the amount of time spent on it.
That's DLC.
It adds custom weapons, custom armor, all custom voice acting for every single person.
Oh my
gosh. It's got lip syncing. It's really, really a well produced mod. I highly recommend it. That said, I wouldn't have been able to get my money back, and I would have been pretty upset about that because I don't know about you, but it's very, very important to me to get closure on a story if I'm going to pay money for it.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And that goes with any type of DLC. I mean, we can jump into the next topic if you'd like with this Arkham Knight DLC that's coming out where they're promising
stuff.
Before
you get to that, sorry. Just
no, that's no trouble.
I just wanted to mention one last thing that I think is really important, and that is... So there are good and bad sides to this argument.
Yes.
I think that there were some really immature... trolls and gamers who went way too far on the modders.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think there were a lot of modders who were, I don't want to say greedy, but who were not thinking clearly when they were setting prices and things like that. And it's worth noting, everyone's saying, well, we should have some kind of system. And like they're angry at the commenters because they're saying now modders can't get paid and it's your fault. And I'd like to say if Valve or Bethesda really wanted to implement a modding system that rewarded the creators and didn't punish the people paying the money, here's the split. Valve gets 30% of your revenue from any mod. Then, on top of that, and this is multiplicative, meaning you add these two percentages and whatever's they're both out of the original total.
Okay.
We've got Valve taking 30%. Bethesda takes 45%.
A whopping
45%. Yeah, that leaves 25% for the mod creator, which is insane.
And there was a statistic going out earlier that also said that in order to make their first $100 or to actually make money off their product, they had to make $100 first.
Yeah.
And so essentially, they have to make $400.
Yes. To clarify, that was for the automated payment system to release your first set of funds. You had to make $100 of net income.
Of net, yeah. And going into those percentages, people who might not have looked so closely at that or who might have seen it, recognized it, and just thought they'd make... Yeah, exactly. It really doomed him from the start.
And to be clear, there are other systems in place that do similar things but are not nearly as predatory. You've got YouTube who... Let's say you work for one of the YouTube networks.
Mm-hmm.
YouTube takes a cut of your money. I don't know the exact percentage. Then they take a new total after YouTube's cut. And the group, the YouTube group that you work with, then takes their cut based off that second remaining total.
Yes, yep.
They're not taking out of the gross profits.
Nope.
Which makes a lot more sense.
Exactly. It leaves a lot more room for the person who's actually putting the content out there to get paid, to get what they deserve.
Precisely.
I don't think that YouTube needs to take anything more than the original percentage.
Correct.
They're making so much of these people, it doesn't make sense to gouge them.
Exactly. And what's more, we've seen other systems that are so much cleaner, they're more reasonable, they're more altruistic.
Mm.
Have you ever used the Humble Bundle?
I haven't, no.
Okay, for those of you who don't know, humblebundle.com, highly recommend it. It is a site that takes, they'll take a bundle of games. Recently, I did the Square Enix bundle. I paid $15 and I got, oh my God, everything from the new Tomb Raider to Deus Ex Human Revolution Director's Cut to Just Cause 2. I got the new Thief. I got Lara Croft Guardian of Light. I got about $200 in games for $15.
Oh my goodness.
And you pay what you want with that system. They have certain minimums you have to hit, and I won't lie, I'm a cheapskate. I paid the minimum in this case. But it was the minimum to get all the games and Steam keys. That's the key. You can get Steam keys if you pay above a certain amount.
Gotcha.
Now, the way that they you decide your price, it goes beyond just pay as you go, which I think is what a lot of people are thinking, where it's, set your own price. Okay, yeah, no, that's great, but how do you know where the money's going?
And yeah.
Well, the other thing the Humble Bundle lets you do is there's three sliders. First of all, every single bundle has a charity that they choose, and a percentage of the profits go to the charity.
Okay.
Then some of it goes to the Humble site, and then some of it goes to the developers.
I like that.
Those sliders are completely adjustable with no limits.
That is amazing.
I have, a couple times that I've bought the bundle, I've given 50% to charity, 50% to the developer in question, and I didn't give anything to Humble Bundle, which is kind of lame just because they did a great job bringing everything together.
But in a sense,
the fact that you can, and I actually, it was because it was Charity Water, who I in particular support. If you guys don't know about them, they drill water wells, fresh water for villages in Africa that do not have them. Lets kids go to school instead of walking 15 miles.
It's a good reason to give that 50% to them. I totally agree. And I think having that slider is the only real option that I think you should have. I think being able to give credit where credit you feel is due is important, because a lot more people are going to choose the option to give stuff to Humble Bundle or whoever's sponsoring it because of the fact, like you said, they're giving them that option.
Yeah.
So I don't think that they would get robbed in any of that case. I think they would get paid fairly. Plus, it would bring a lot more people over to it. And going back to the YouTube thing, like they shouldn't be messing with the people who are bringing millions of views to their site.
Exactly.
Because that's what's important.
Exactly.
You're housing content, and the content is important.
Exactly. How many kids, seriously, I have a 13-year-old brother, how many kids bought Arma 3 or Arma 2 for DayZ?
Yep.
Seriously. How many people, when I was in high school, I probably knew more people who owned Warcraft 3 to play Defense of the Ancients than people who owned it to actually play the regular game.
The
online whole
thing through, yeah. I completely agree. There are more people that find those mods and those off-style things attractive and want them coming in.
Exactly. And for the record, for those who don't know, Dota, one of the main developers, Defense of the Ancients, one of the main developers, Ice Frog, is one of the main consultants and developers on Dota 2, which is a Valve game. And if these companies really want a way, like I said earlier with Counter-Strike and Team Fortress 2, if these companies really want, as they claim, just some way to help these mod developers make some money, well, then pay them. Then hire them. They're giving you free advertising. I mean, it's insanity. This New Vegas playthrough I'm doing right now, I bought the game again just to do it because I used to own it for console. Now I own it for PC. And I'm not playing it because I wanted to play New Vegas. I'm playing it because I saw some really cool mods and went, oh man, that looks sweet. I want to try that.
You wanted a whole new experience, and that should be available to you for the reason, like the reasonable prices that they're going to set up. To summarize all this, I just think that Valve, Bethesda, I think any developer out there needs to take a good, hard look at how things are being developed right now and kind of decide on where they want it to be, because you're not going to be able to avoid microtransactions. You're not going to be able to avoid DLC. You're not going to be able to avoid people modding for free will. But what you can do is you can bring those things kind of together and make gaming more cohesive.
Yes.
There are a lot of ways that gaming is very separated just because of these difficulties. And I think being able to actually listen to developers and listen to gamers and do what they need is much more important than your paycheck.
Yeah, and just to add to that, you know, one thing that a lot of people are saying is that, you know, these modders have no other recourse. They can't just go make games. Well, actually, yes, they can.
Yes, they can.
That's a great way to, I mean, there are mod teams out there that have games on Steam Greenlight right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that a lot of these modders, I understand. You would love to be able to make money doing what you want to do. I'm the same way. I'm doing this podcast right now. I love it.
We have no argument against that.
Exactly. That said, if you want it to go beyond a passion product or project, it's a different beast entirely, and you do have to look at getting a team of maybe your fellow modders together and working on a cohesive project, and not just designing something that you want to add to your game per se, but something that you think people will want.
Yeah,
and so it's a whole different animal. The people who are implying that like game development is not an option for modders, I think are pushing it.
Yes, they're very conservatively looking at things. They need to kind of accept the fact that there's a lot more options out there than what just mainstream shows us.
Yeah.
And so this is kind of a difficult segue, but I do think that, going into the DLC and microtransactions, with the future in mind, One of the things coming out here this fall will be the Arkham Knight game, probably one of the final in this series.
So excited.
And I am too. I've been on the edge of my seat since it was delayed and announced and delayed and announced and finally put out. And I just think it's going to be great. But they came out with this DLC that they're going to put on, which adds an additional $40 price tag to the $60 price tag you pay for the game. And it gives you a season pass of sorts, which is nice.
What kind of season is 6 months long?
It doesn't make a lot of sense for what they're trying to accomplish here. It's kind of like they had too much of the game.
Right.
And we're like, oh my gosh, we can't just let them get away with this for $60.
Sometimes it feels that way.
Yeah.
I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and say they're trying to prevent a Borderlands 2 situation from arising
and
again.
And I think that that is a good option.
They don't want to promise you all future DLC. And then they don't actually cover all future DLC.
Yeah, and then they kind of turn around and do the exact opposite thing.
Exactly.
That they're saying.
Exactly.
Gosh. I have too many friends who don't play Borderlands 2 anymore because of the fact that they paid for all that DLC and only got a very small fraction of it. And maybe this is a very good handle on how to change that, how to make that problem better.
This really brings to mind what I was discussing earlier with what is a fair value for a mod. If they're only adding costumes and a couple story missions, this is two-thirds the cost of the game here.
Yes.
We're talking about. They need to be adding two-thirds more content if they're going to charge that
much. Completely agree. And I'm hoping that the six-month window is kind of that option for them to cram some stuff in, because there will be like at least one or two holidays around there, so maybe there's some options that they can put some bigger story arcs in and
sure.
Do some things with that. And I think, you know, to play the devil's advocate, I think it could be a good idea in the fact that people who buy the game and want to see a villain that they never got to play against,
sure,
or a situation go down, I think it's a good setup for that.
Yeah.
But again, the $40 is very, very hard to look at and be okay
yeah.
with.
One more devil's advocate point. They did have some serious issues, and I had friends who were furious with the fact that you could not get all of the pre-order costumes for Arkham City without literally buying the game multiple
yep.
times. They were like, do I want to be Dark Knight Returns Batman, or do I want to be Batman Beyond? Do I want to be, you know, there were so many really cool Batman costumes in that, but should you have to pay $35 or buy the game multiple times just to do that?
No.
No. And so I think this is one case where the season pass isn't terrible.
And I think it's important that those little perspectives are looked at. I think that
yeah.
there is a good tangent that they're on trying to get this out there. Now
yeah,
it is Ubisoft that who puts out Arkham Knight? Now I feel like I'm incorrect, but I feel like it's either Ubisoft or it's Rocksteady.
Arkham Knight is Warner Brothers and just Warner Brothers.
Just Warner Brothers. Okay, so I wonder if they
am
had
I misreading this? No, that can't be. Oh, it's Rocksteady Studios.
Okay.
Rocksteady Studios publishers are Warner Bros. Interactive.
See, and I was going to say Rockstar and immediately stopped myself because I was like, well, it's not a Rockstar game.
Yeah, to be
game,
fair,
but
you were close.
Yes.
You were close.
So I think that Rocksteady, you know, going on to that does a good job putting these things out, but this $40 just isn't really enough.
Right. Well, and you had brought up earlier concerns about cut content or possibly on-disc issues.
Yes.
And you know what this is giving me a bit of a flashback to? And, you know, I can't really say because I haven't gotten hands-on with the game yet, so I'm not going to say this is absolutely the case, but did you play any Destiny?
No, I actually never got into Destiny.
Okay.
Just had too much trouble watching people do raids. And
no,
just
sure.
Didn't
well,
like
I mean,
that.
I had already played an MMO before, so I pretty much didn't bother with it. But I did
Makes
play
sense.
It a bit. And, you know, one of the issues with Destiny, and I've heard this almost universally across the board, is there are hints at a greater story that was ripped out of the game
really?
To be parceled off in DLC.
Oh,
there are so
troubling.
Many moments where they will say, they'll imply that they're going to tell you a bunch of story, and then it just abruptly changes topics.
Oh,
yes.
Oh, wow.
Yes, and on top of that, I flash back to things like Street Fighter, and we talked about MK10 a little bit earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Goro, for the record, he ships as on-disc DLC.
Yes,
he is content that
like
is
that.
On the CD when you purchase it, whether or not you pay for the microtransaction. And that, to me, I will never think it's okay to sell content that was intended to be in the original game.
It seems a real shady move on the distributor's part.
And don't try and tell me, oh, Garo, you know, we just wanted to put it in for the fans. We weren't gonna. Garo's been in every game.
Yeah, you He's knew he was gonna be coming
be
there
like
for
cutting,
the X.
It'd be like making, you know, Sub-Zero an unlockable
right?
character. It's like, no, he's one of the most iconic characters in Mortal Kombat. So, well, I don't want to go too far down this rabbit hole, but I would like to just express continued concern at the rate at which we're seeing more and more on-disc DLC locked behind a paywall.
Yeah, it's one of those things that, again, looking into the future, it's going to either need to be changed or it's going to just crash and burn a lot of people.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, maybe Rocksteady kind of saw that and thought maybe we can do something more so it's not just one character for this absurd price.
Have they said that the season pass will add additional characters? I know they said costumes and villains.
Yeah, they did say villains.
Characters?
I don't know if they said playable characters.
I don't know if we're going to see like a Nightwing again or anything.
But
I know
that they did say challenge maps, and I know that a lot of the times that they've introduced new challenge maps into this Arkham series, it's come with a
sure, like
a
the Joker challenge
yes,
maps
there you
from
go.
Arkham Asylum.
So there could be an option in which you do. I don't think so. I don't think that they're going to offer new characters.
Right.
And so that's where I'm hoping that they push on those story arcs, because that is the only way that you're actually going to get enough of that money coming in for that $40.
Right. Right.
People are going to look at this over the next couple months that it's available, and they're going to start to make the decision that it's not worth it. And that's my opinion. I just think that unless you're going to offer something that's a little bit better for the continuation of that 6 months, no one's going to bother. They're probably going to get the first couple things, realize it was a waste, and then not even worry about picking the rest of it up throughout the 6 months.
Yeah, that's true. Well, and I think, though, that a lot of the sales with games like Batman in particular, since it's such a large mainstream mm-hmm. franchise, they get a lot of people who pre-order and then barely play it. Beyond
yes.
you know, their initial impression. And
yep.
and that kind of brings me to another topic I kind of wanted to discuss if you're good on the Batman.
Yeah, I was going to say we should probably wrap it up shortly.
Sure,
but
no
if
problem.
You've got something, I know you said you had a few ones that were quick, so go ahead.
There was something in particular that I wanted to point out. I haven't really heard too much said about this, and it's the juxtaposition of the new Star Wars Battlefront trailer to the new Just Cause 3 trailer. So,
I did see both of those,
yeah.
so I can at least offer some good opinions.
So for those of you who have not played Battlefront, it's Star Wars meets Battlefield.
Okay.
That enough said.
Yes.
Just Cause 3, it's an open world it's an open world spy game, I guess, where you run around, blow stuff up, and you got a grappling hook attached to your arm. That's about all you need to know.
That's pretty much it. Yeah,
it's great.
It's like Far Cry 4, but with 10,000 times more explosions. And
third person.
And third person, yes.
It's quite good. I highly recommend that as well. Well, the second one. The third one's not out yet, obviously. But here's the thing. Battlefront released a trailer that was exciting because you saw things.
but
however, I don't trust a single thing I saw.
No, and neither do I. I thought they were just trying to play up the new movie that's
exactly.
coming out.
And the reason for that is because the entire Battlefront trailer was pre-rendered.
Yep.
For you, those of you who don't know, that means they had a CGI artist create a cool-looking movie, and it has nothing to do with the technological capabilities of the game or the the game in question.
Right. There were a few commentators I saw on that specific video that said, okay, well, we obviously know we're going to get to ride a speeder bike, but that's probably not going to be anything what it's like in the game.
Exactly. And in sharp juxtaposition to this, we've got, you know, Just Cause 3, which the entire, I think it's a minute and a half at least.
Yeah, it was a long trailer.
The entire trailer is all in-engine, like, scenes. It's all gameplay.
That's
and it's
great.
Yeah, it gives you a wonderful idea. Now, to be fair, it's basically the exact same thing as its previous iteration, but I could say the same thing about Battlefront.
In that sense, I don't care. I think it looked fantastic, and
yeah.
I'd play it again.
And so I really appreciate being able to see things. Like, I got to see some of the new physics they're introducing.
Mm-hmm.
I saw the way that you can destroy things, because a big part of that game is blowing literally everything up. You're
yes.
overthrowing a dictatorship.
Yep.
And so I saw a helicopter that ran into an FM radio transmitter, and the transmitter actually bent around the helicopter. Tail, which is something we have not seen before.
Oh,
we've seen stuff fall apart based on where it's impacted, but to actually see metal warp, that was pretty exciting.
Again, you know, with just a couple of years' time of having to fix things, it's really cool to see that they can just bat that out and have something so great come back.
Yeah, precisely. Well, and also, it gives us an idea of how far along the development is. You know, yeah. One thing that really scares me, and I don't know about you, about DICE in particular, for those who don't know the developer of Battlefield, is they rush things.
Yes.
Notoriously. You saw Battlefield 4. You saw the initial state of Hardline.
I tried not to see the Battlefield 4,
right?
But...
Well, and lest we forget, a lot of people are enjoying Hardline, not me personally, but a lot of people do really enjoy it, and I don't think they remember that it was delayed almost an entire year.
Yeah.
Because people saw it and went, this is the same game as Battlefield 4, and also you haven't fixed Battlefield 4 yet. So I'm very, very wary about Battlefront, which is a shame because I love Battlefront,
too. That was another point I was going to bring up, is it's not going to be the disappointment I want, because this game could flop, and that'd be fine because DICE has made Battlefield, and I've never played much of the multiplayer, didn't really like it. Played some of the story, it was okay. Didn't really like much of the game either.
Yeah.
So I can't really see them chugging along with just a great game. But now it's just like, oh no, like this is really going to be something I'm worried about. And I was hoping it would at least kind of be playable, at least kind of be fun.
Exactly.
But now that they're showing us trailers where it's all CGI, it worries you to the sense that it's like, okay, are we actually going to get to see what the game looks like, or are we just going to open the box and hope for the best?
Right. And just one other thing, I don't want to be too negative on Battlefront, but one other thing I'd like to mention is that a lot of people are very confident in DICE because they made the newest Battlefield games.
Mm-hmm.
Battlefield is a very, very, very different game now than it was when Battlefront came out.
Yes. Oh, gosh, yes. It's changed dramatically.
And so I'm interested to see if we're going to actually see Call of Duty Star Wars, because the new Battlefield are more akin to Call of Duty than they are to their original roots.
That idea had not come into my brain yet, and you blew me away. I
hope I didn't ruin it too much for you.
I wouldn't mind it. I wouldn't be scared of it. But wow, it's just, you know, the cybernetics thing really threw me for a loop. And to think that there's going to be a lot more touched on with that, it's I don't know. It's interesting. I'll probably pick up Black Ops 3 just because I have to. But
I would, but then I'd have to turn in my gamer card at the door.
You'd have to just, all right.
I think I've said too much bad about Battlefield and Call of Duty to, I'd be too much of a hypocrite to go buy one of the games. Maybe I'll play one at a buddy's house.
Yeah, there you go. Just
then
just
berate him for owning it.
Or go in under the cloak of night and wear a hood or a mask.
Or a ghillie suit,
and, right? Yes, there you go. And make sure that no one has to actually recognize it's you picking the game up.
Perfect.
Well, thank you for joining me, Henry. I'm really glad that we could get you on, and I'm so excited for more podcasts here in the future with you on. I think just essentially you, me, and Tom, but I think even if we had all four, you, me, Tom, and Max here, that would be phenomenal. We would just be bantering. I mean, we went about an hour this time, so it's great to see that we can keep things flowing even when the big guns aren't out right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity.
All right. Well, this has been the 105 The Tickets Video Game Podcast. Thanks for joining us.